Hey, it's Chaz and AJ.
Hello.
Thank you for listening to our podcast.
Thank you.
We hope you enjoy it. And please subscribe, comment, share, do all those things that make us look good.
And be nice.
Thank you. The weird thing they found in the Gilgo Beach murder suspect's house. Brian Foley, former chief of detectives, on the phone. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, everyone. How you doing?
Morning.
Good, thank you. He's now the Tallentown manager.
Yes.
I just want to say I would never make your team of detectives because my whole life I never saw the H in the Hartford Whalers logo.
Yeah, same.
Oh my God. Yeah,
this was a clue.
Same. Wow.
That just went right by
it
me.
It was a cold case for
my
us.
Whole life.
It's no looking right at you the whole time.
Well, you know.
Now I can't not see it.
Yes. Yes.
You would have a large cold case file, that's for sure.
Yep, didn't solve this one either.
Another one for the cold case. But. Yep.
What's that giant stack of folders behind Chess?
Yep,
all unsolved.
Yep, bam, and filled. One crime
that's
I get.
Right.
Yep.
You want to really blow your mind? Look at the Milwaukee Brewers logo. The baseball mitt is the M and the B.
Okay, I can only do so much on one day.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to blow my mind.
My brain is tired.
Relax there, Phil. I don't want to blow my mind.
Comedian Ayesha May in studio, Friday, August 4th, comedy night at Crystal Bees with Matt Lopes.
Cool.
Have you been following this Gilgo Beach murder thing? Does that interest you at all or no?
No, I have not been following it. Is this the guy that was the Long Island Beach murderer?
Yes.
Yes, I have heard that. Yes.
Same guy.
Yeah.
Same guy.
Yep.
So four girls, sex workers, that doesn't make it any different.
Yeah.
But they found wrapped in burlap, strategically placed along the beach. They're digging. They find multiple other bodies dismembered. They don't know if they're all connected, but they're trying to connect this New York City architect who's married with kids to as many of these murders as they can. So they're rifling through his house now and his yard. Now, I heard they found a soundproof room, but that's not true.
So they found a lot at the house, and here's the thing. They don't know where these women were killed, actually, and there exists the possibility, and I would say likelihood, that at least one of them was killed in the house. So they found a vault down in his basement, and he had hundreds and hundreds of guns, which explains when they snatched him up in front of his office building. You know, why serve a search warrant to lock him up at the house when he's armed for battle there, when they could just easily walk up and grab him at the office thing. But he had, I believe it was over 90 guns registered to him, and then 200 guns or so they found at the house. But they've been there for 12 days now, and if you think about it, you know, you have all these victims, 11 victims. They don't want to tie him all together and say he's a suspect in all 11 of them, but you better believe he is at least a suspect in all 11 of them. So they only really get one bite at the apple to search this house. And whoever owns it at some point is going to want to sell it, and I'm sure whoever buys it's going to want to knock it down and put up a new structure, and I'm sure it's valuable land. So they are basically combing through this house for forensic evidence for not just one. It's not like just one murder happened of all these women, and possibly more that are undiscovered. So they're looking for any type of DNA evidence they can find. They're digging up the backyard with a backhoe. They have found burlap bags or sacks there. They found.
Is there a sign that they started with shovels and then brought in a backhoe? Is that a sign that they're finding stuff in the dirt?
So what they do is they use the ground penetrating radar to look for anomalies, and anomalies in the compaction of the dirt and the things that may have changed that aren't consistent with the rest of the yard to indicate that there may have been digging there. So that's what they go and look for, and that's where they dig. They might start with the shovels and then hit a rock or God knows what, and then now they need the excavator. But that's kind of standard stuff that they're going to do in this type of search. It's just they're going to hit everything they can find. They've taken a massive amount of evidence. And
you said they found burlap?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
All right.
And duct tape, similar.
Here we go.
Oh, God.
And, you know, they're taking out the electronic evidence, which has really been damning to this guy. So they'll be taking anything, computers, cell phones, anything they can get out of there. But the interesting thing is now is they're shaking down the prisons, and they're finding some sex workers or people who dealt in that trade that have had contact with this guy, and they're really leaving no stone unturned. This guy's on suicide watch, which is a predictable outcome in these things, as we know from the Dulos case here in Connecticut. When you know they believe that they're caught and the end is near, that's usually unfortunately or fortunately, depending on perspective, predictable outcome.
Right.
So a lot of moving parts. A very interesting case if you're into this kind of thing. You know, there's he had a secluded residence in South Carolina, a timeshare in Vegas, and then I knew it, I said it the day he got arrested in one of the interviews, he's going to have a storage unit. And so they're filming those things. Yes, he does. The cops are going to need a storage unit for all the evidence, literally. So it's going to be an incredible case, and I can't wait to see how bad this guy gets it.
Did you see the interview with this former escort who said she had a date with him? She met him for dinner at a Port Jeff restaurant, and
I didn't.
They casually brought up the Gilgo Beach murders, and she said he got this look in his eye. That it was weird.
Yeah.
And I've heard this with other interviews with serial killers when they start talking about their murders, this sensation that comes over them.
They get into it.
And she said, I saw something in him when he started talking about this, and he knew more than what was out in public.
Oh, my goodness.
And she said, you know, she canceled the whatever.
Check, please. Yeah. I got to get up early. I got to go. I got to call.
Right.
I got to go.
How about you have some sisters and brothers and sisters of the victims that report being contacted by a strange man after the murders.
Yes.
And now you're seeing his internet search records include all of them searching up the siblings. So this is going to be an interesting case for profilers to dig into with this guy, but he's certainly filling a lot of checking a lot of the boxes. But the amount of evidence that the cops are going to have to go through, you know, I'm sure they only intended on being there a couple days at most, and they're at 12 now, and I'm guessing would have had to appeal to the court to extend the length of the search warrant. They can keep that house and keep searching, but I'm sure that house is going to be picked up and shaken upside down and see what falls out. Every little crevice is being searched there.
And you said they have one shot at this, so once they leave, they can't get another search warrant to come back?
So they could say hold it, where they would have to back out and not search it anymore, but they could keep cops around the outside. No one can get safe entry because we want to apply for an extension and stay longer to search for the property. But I don't think they're going to be able to do that. They're going to get one bite, and that'll be the end of it.
Oh, wow.
But then maybe they hold it.
One of the benefits to busting him in Midtown, the cops said, was not only did they, you know, they didn't want him in a house with a bunch of guns when they took him.
Good idea.
But they had to drive him out to Yaphank, and that was like an hour and a half drive, and they thought they might get him to talk in the car on the way out there, and he said nothing.
Wow.
He's like, well, I'm a lawyer.
Just nothing.
Once they lawyer up, you can't really even ask them about the crimes anymore. But yes, those types of operations are very strategic. It's not haphazard. Hey, let's just go grab them. I mean, everything is strategy. Every inch of it, you're thinking, you know, how can this benefit the case or how could this hurt the case? Everything the cops do in these types, and you know, when you put together these serial killer task forces, it is the best of the best of homicide detectives. And I was on one once, but certainly not as a homicide detective and more of just a supervision. But what I had, we had the best detectives. And if you look, they're looking to tie in right now down there in that house. If they find a hair of one of the other victims that's not even in this, the four that he's suspected of right now, they're going to use that to tie them in. If you look at William Devin Howell here in Connecticut, what, he killed seven or eight, I believe, they found a drop of blood. In fact, my old boss, the current commissioner, Ravella, it was his case as a homicide detective, a drop of blood in a van. Never found. They didn't even have the victim at that point. Never found the body. They found it since. They had not found the body at that point. And he got a conviction on that drop of blood, and William Devin Howell did 15 years and never got out because they found the bodies after that. It's right here in Connecticut.
How did he get a conviction on a drop of blood?
He's really good. he's really good.
No trade secretary.
Wow.
Not the commissioner by accident. Probably the he's the best detective I've ever seen. We got a couple others in cold case right now that are really good here in Connecticut. But you look it up, William Devin Howell, the first victim or the first arrest he had was for, he got 15 years. He pled out to manslaughter instead of murder on just a drop of blood. And, you know, some other circumstantial evidence there, but the main one was her blood. So it was quite a case. These guys, these detectives, I can't imagine this task force in New York has got to be just an all-star team of the smartest minds. If you look when
this after they screwed
getting
up the first part of this by not following some obvious leads, really on top of it this time.
Yeah.
Everyone's watching.
It's personal now.
You know, sometimes these cases start out with police departments that aren't overly equipped or experienced in these types of murders and or investigations. And the faster you can get the investigations to people who have great experience in these things, and I say experience and successful experience, and they understand what can go wrong in these investigations, the sooner you can farm it out to those people, the greater likelihood it is that it's going to get solved.
The top cop at the time, he's been in jail for fighting or beating up a guy who stole his stash of porn and sex toys.
Yeah. That doesn't
he was known to be with hookers. He
was a suspect.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah,
I remember that now. Yeah,
not a suspect. It was certainly popular in media or social media. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that he was a suspect.
Wow, I remember that. Yeah, yep.
Do you think there's any chance in hell that him and the architect work together in some way,
oh,
or maybe he's the one with the dismembered bodies? And
I don't.
No. Okay.
Sure?
That'd be crazy.
I'm throwing it out there in case it comes around a year from now. It's
right.
Like, yeah, I said that a year ago.
Documented.
Yes, you'd see that. Yeah. The suspect in this case would be saying, hey, he made me do it almost immediately.
Yeah, right. They'd be talking. What's the best? I know it's more of a lawyery thing, and we have Brian Foley. He's the Tallentown Town manager, but former chief of detectives, former deputy chief in Hartford. What do you think the best thing that this guy, the architect, can get at this point? Let's just say overwhelming evidence. I mean, you're never getting out.
No.
So what's the deal? The conversation is, I'm going to give you some more bodies. I'm going to give you the locations. But what can the state give him at this point?
Not a whole lot, because look at, he's 60 years old. And, you know, if he goes for the three, he's never seen, I don't care, he's not going to see the light of day. He's not the most healthy of individuals, just looking at him. He's never going to see the light of day. So, you know, it's more of a psychological thing in you know, relieving the guilt that's weighing on his mind type of situation to confess to these sort of things. But again, they'd have to work through his attorney to get that kind of stuff. They can't talk to him. He's asked for his attorney, so everything now has to go through this guy's attorney. And he may have some wishes for his soon-to-be ex-wife and family members that the police can accommodate to some degree and get some leverage that way for him to pony it up. But right now he's saying absolutely nada. I don't expect that to change anytime soon, maybe on his deathbed.
You know, this is a weird thing to say, but my weird things happen in my brain, and I'm just going to say them out loud.
Do share.
He's a tall guy to try to hang himself.
Very tall.
Like if he, you know, he's on suicide watch.
Yeah.
Can you imagine this guy trying to hang himself?
Yeah,
like,
it work.
So not everyone hangs themselves with feet suspended in air. So you can do it sitting. I've seen it. God.
Oh,
like on a chair.
On a doorknob.
Yeah, prison bars. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Sorry for that image.
Bunk bed.
But I was just like, how the hell is this guy?
Thanks for bringing those memories up.
Yeah. Sorry, man. Plus, he's heavy. Like, is there a sheet that's going to hold him up long enough?
Right.
All right.
Just saying.
Horrible. But
just saying.
He did horrible things. All right, Brian. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate it. AJ was actually angry during the break.
Angry!
When we were talking about what should the phone subject be called. I said, should it be called camping stories? He's like, nah.
No.
Camping mishaps.
Right. Want the good stuff.
So I don't
want
to hear about you going on a camping trip with your family and being happy.
Us. Yeah, no.
Oh, you made pancakes. No. Get out of here.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Oh, you had, you had a wonderful time. Oh,
no.
Yeah.
Bring me the meat. I'm hungry.
Damn straight. That's exactly what he said.
Bring me the meat. I'm hungry.
Wow.
Yeah, should be
all right, so camping mishaps and animal encounters, anything of that nature.
I'm such an idiot.
203-882-9757. Comedian Ayesha May in studio. She went camping. How'd that go?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. I went with my sister and her kid. Like, you know, sister kids, brother's kids, my sister-in-law, her sister came.
No,
women
my camping?
Brother was there. Oh. It was mostly women, though. But, yeah, it was...
So one guy, all
one
women.
Dude, and then his nephew.
Oh, I want to hear his camping mishap.
Yeah, I'm just picturing
he
one.
Did everything. I'm just picturing...
His mistake was saying yes.
I'm just picturing one snake and everybody evacuates different directions.
I'm picturing, like, yes, I'll carry the water. Yes, I'll carry the cooking equipment.
Right. Was...
Yes, I'll carry the tent.
Right.
I forget. It was down in Salem. It's like Witches something, Witches Campground. It's very cool. They have
Witches
like a,
Campground?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I know, right? It sounds, especially in Salem.
It sounds like the beginning of a movie.
Exactly, right, yeah. Six people last year.
But no,
last
it's there. Cool. There's like a lake. There's a pool. They actually had Christmas in July and Santa came. Now it's like the honest music.
Santa at a witch's campground?
That's weird.
But no, I was... Because Ruth asked me, she's like, what's something funny that had happened? So I am covered in mosquito bites, but I have a giant cluster literally. Like as they see me fidgeting in my seat, it's like right near my butt. And then there's one near the crest of my labia, is what I said to Ruth.
The crest of the labia?
I was
like a book.
AJ probably doesn't even know what that is. So, yeah. The crest of the labia.
The crotch?
Was that a crotch?
Yes. Yeah. I literally have a mosquito bite. Yeah. Right near my lady bits.
Sure, it's a
mosquito. Yeah. It's very, it's a lot.
Right.
Mm. Yeah. It's fun. It's a fun time.
I wonder if that was like a Star Wars mission where they were trying to.
Yeah, we're all the Death Star.
Before they started, they had the map and they're like, right here, this is the only way to it.
Right.
So yeah, I'll be fidgeting for a few days.
We have to hit right here.
And all these X fighters are trying to get right.
They got me up. Ah! They're crashing.
And you just blow up like.
Right. Basically, she's a Death Star.
I do have a Death Star tattoo, so it's fitting. So, yeah, it's very itchy. Got attacked a lot. But other than that, it was fun.
Oh, okay. That's not much of a mishap, but you're basically a mosquito buffet.
Eaten alive by mosquitoes. Oh, my God. I have them, everywhere. I have, that whatever that lotion is, so that way I can stop itching it, because it's like...
When they leave with their little belts open, I can't have another bite.
Yeah. It's pretty gross.
I've fed mosquitoes many times. Many times. You get so many, like, marks. Like,
have you guys gone camping?
I used to go camping all the time.
I don't camp.
Any mishaps?
Yeah.
So my dad started us in a tent.
Uh-huh.
And then that went to a pop-up, which is like this little metal trailer that folds, and it's a tent built onto the little metal trailer.
Yep. Those things are great.
I like those.
Pop, I don't even know if they exist anymore.
They do.
They, exist?
They still make them,
Do they?
Yeah, they're a little more advanced, but now, yes.
That was cool, because you're off the ground, you're on a mat.
Exactly.
You know, but you're still in a tent.
Right.
And then he got this big trailer, and we were like, Dad, this isn't camping.
Yes, it is.
You have an oven.
Yes, it is.
You have a bed.
That's
you have
camping
a bathroom.
To me.
I'm eating mac and cheese right now. This shouldn't be happening.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that.
I camp with showers.
So we pull in, and we look across the street. It's, you know, gravel road, and there's another campsite, and there's a couple of guys setting up a tent.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of an like a decline down.
Okay.
Like a, you know, it's kind of like a sloping grade down to their campsite. So we're setting up. We're giving my dad all kinds of trouble because now we're not camping.
Right.
So then it rains. And we're in the trailer, and he's pulling out these little mini trays of lasagna from the oven. And we're looking out the window, and we see these two guys, and their stuff's floating in
this. Oh, my God.
Like 6 inches of water.
Good times,
that's all run off down into their site. And we're like, this is camping.
Right. Oh, yeah.
This is camping.
Yeah. You don't want anything that like crawls into your tent, slithers. I mean, you find all kinds of crap.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm good.
My radio career actually started at a campground.
Really?
We went to Black Rock Campground in the late 70s, and we were really, really bored. Like, two kids who only smoke pot get really bored camping really fast. And there was a horseshoe tournament. and my brother signed up for it. And so we took a cassette tape and we just did play-by-play for the horseshoe tournament.
Oh, wow. Commentary.
Stoned out of our mind.
That's so funny.
And so we play some of the tape back to the rest of our camp crew and they're laughing. And then that became our hobby after that. We'd get stoned and we would record into these little cassette decks.
Nowadays,
get stoned. And then
right
that led to the dream that, well, maybe we could do this on the radio.
Right.
But here's me at 11 years old.
No.
Yes. This is
the
Panama Canal was in the news because we were handing it off to Panama or whatever.
Yeah, getting back, whatever.
And my friend did this report like he's a news anchor at the Panama Canal or in the Panama Canal. And then he sank. So now I do the follow-up. I'm now a reporter reporting from the Panama Canal at 11 years old.
Terrible travesty has taken place.
Horrible travesty from the campground.
Hello, and this is Robert Smuck in the middle of the Panamanian Canal. My friend died in this canal. That's why I am doing this story. Also, at least 1,500 Panamanians died as they were trying to save my friend that was also sinking in a boat
just like I am.
And now I'm sinking.
I think it's bubbles.
So this is...
You were funny. That's clever.
Were you in a bathtub when these bubbles came out?
No, my friend's blowing the bubbles in a straw in a cup.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
We didn't have machines.
Sound effects and everything.
Yeah.
Look at you.
Robert in Milford.
2017, I went camping with my brother, his best friend, and my six-year-old nephew. And we brought a little bit of drinks with us.
Right.
One night, my brother got a little bit too wasted, lost his footing, and ended up falling into the fire pit.
Oops.
And he caught his palm on the backstone. One that reflects all the heat back to us.
Oh.
And essentially, if you look at your hand, the whole quarter right below the thumb, that whole thing ballooned out with about a 3-inch blister.
Don't call them bubbles.
I have to admit, he stuck it out. He stayed the whole rest of the extra 2 days. You know, he didn't go to the Bridgeport fire and burn unit until we came back.
See, that's dedication right there. You caught him red-handed.
Wow.
Essentially, they had to slice the whole thing off and let it grow back.
But
it was gnarly. It was gnarly.
Yep. Yep.
Well.
Drunk on the campfire definitely do that.
Good of him to potentially sacrifice his hand for the camping trip.
Right. But you all had a good time on the woods.
That fire, that's something you don't really, you know, you think about. You get that campfire going, it's the best part of camping.
Yep.
Really, that to me, that's camping. At night, the fire's gone, you're around people you love, and you're talking, and the stars and the sounds, it's great.
You can feel a little too safe there sometimes, though.
And you're drinking, and you get up, and it's like, oh, there's a fire right here.
And then some drunk falls into it.
Well, thank you for the call.
Yeah, great one, man.
Glad he's okay.
Good meet.
Jeff in Manchester.
How we doing this morning?
Good, thank you.
Great. Yeah, I went camping with my now wife many years ago, and we were with several friends. And while we were sitting there, my wife started to feel a little not well. So we went into the camp tent, which happened to belong to her sister and was really expensive because we couldn't afford anything at that time. But we just about asleep, and all of a sudden we hear an extraordinarily loud explosion as one of our friends, we'll call it Mountain Dew, can fell into the fire before it was open.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
and it blew out the whole campfire and blew large chunks of coal into the tent and landed on the sleeping bag my wife is or was sleeping in at the time.
Right. Well, it's not cold anymore.
We weren't camping anymore.
Right. Yeah, we just made a coal cannon out of Mountain Dew.
It's Mountain Dew. Camping.
Right. Yep, exactly.
That's Mountain Dew.
That's awesome.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, man. Please do not try this.
No. But
we used to... this actually got me kicked out of the Boy Scouts. I went on one camping trip with them. And I did two things, actually, that got me sent home.
Oh, wow. Nice.
The first thing was I threw a can of Dinty Moore beef stew into the fire.
Oh.
And that can blew up.
Nice.
And, like, just people sitting near the fire had, like,
stew,
pieces of potato.
Burnt by a chunk of meat.
No one really knew who did it. But then I tied one of the parents' cars, a tent rope to one of the parents' cars.
Right. Nice.
And when they left, the tent got pulled down.
Classic.
And then they kind of figured out who it was. And they're like, you got to go.
Now it would be cool if you threw in, like, alphabet soup in there and, like, someone had ow across their forehead. What's his pain? Ow.
It's very dangerous. Yeah. The can could have, like, cut someone's head off.
It could have, but it didn't.
Horribly
shrapnel. Right.
Dangerous.
Right.
Don't do it.
All right. So let me write this down. This weekend, throw cannon fire.
Rich in Clinton.
Yeah, how you doing? I'm from New Britain, but I'm in Clinton right now.
That's great.
I'm going to have an asset to help my wife.
I love that
park. She's camping to pack up and get out. She's got to be out by noon.
Oh,
now you notice I said it. You notice I said it was just my wife.
Yes,
I don't go camping. I don't go camping anymore. We did for many years, and every single time we go, and I'm with them, it rains.
Oh,
so that's why you were told to stay home.
We got brushed by a hurricane once. Scott Haney said it was going to be a great weekend. We got brushed by a hurricane.
It's you.
We went to Cooperstown. They hadn't had any rain there in 6 weeks. We got there 4 inches in 3 hours.
I'm going to call you Rain Man.
Roads are flooded, everything.
Yeah, definitely.
We had to leave the campsite. We had to go to a hotel.
Nice.
So now she goes camping by herself.
But without you.
Or with her friends.
Right.
And you know what? And if they do that, they get weather like this. It's nice. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I go, forget it.
It's a holiday for you, too. She's out of the house.
Oh, yeah.
This works.
We all little need some time away.
Exactly.
All right. And she can't pack herself up?
Yeah.
No, I help her.
What if it rains,
you
show up?
You know, we're in our 60s, so, you know, I come down and give her a hand.
Gotcha.
No problem.
So what does that mean? She can't pick up paper towels, forks.
Nah, she's got she got her right hand operated on.
Oh,
and
gotcha.
So
Satan, you're a good
guy. Iffy.
It's Why? Called a partnership. Yeah. You help each other out, okay?
Right.
You let Jennifer just pack everything. If Jennifer wanted help, you'd help her.
This is why women now rule the world.
The estrogen kicks
because
in.
You hear how they stick together.
Yes,
they don't even know each other.
No,
they don't.
I've known Ayesha for a lot longer than she doesn't know.
Than this woman
your wife,
on the phone,
Rich.
And I'm defending her.
Right, and you're coming after me for her. This is why women rule the world.
It's like a bad signal.
There's this code. They just defend each other.
Yep.
Right, I'm just asking questions over here. She can't pack herself up?
Right.
Who cares if she can?
Her hand was operated on. Was that because she punched the wall after you did something stupid?
Did she fall into the campfire? Did she put beans in the campfire and blow up?
Yeah. That's right.
Right.
No, great story, and it sounds like they figured out how to have a good trip.
Yes.
Don't invite you.
Exactly.
Adam Carolla's on. Are you in California?
Yeah, I am.
What's the average temperature there in late July, August?
Well, if you're in the San Fernando Valley, where I grew up, or many parts of the Southland, it's over 100 degrees on a lot of the days. I don't know what the average is. If you get to the beach, it'll drop down to 73 degrees. So that's why Jay-Z and Beyonce spent $200 million buying a house in Malibu.
No.
Because if you go over the hill into the San Fernando Valley, it's 103 degrees.
It's a lot cheaper just to buy a good AC unit.
It is, but
than a $200 million house.
You got the water, too, so it's
cool. But, yeah, so Thursday they're saying 92 degrees here, Friday 95 degrees, so the governor activates the extreme hot weather protocol because we're pussies.
It's Connecticut, you know.
Yeah.
What is that? We have cool zones here. We're like
cool zones?
105 cool zones.
Yeah.
Like you can go, would be a good name for a strip club, but this isn't that. You go to some place in the park and sit under a pop-up shelter while somebody sprays you with a bottle. Like, it's insane. Like, it's 2023. People can't figure out a way to cool off.
Yeah, that's what we have. We have cooling centers.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
The same way you survived last year, do it again this year.
People need more help.
What do you got to do?
But I love this thing that we're talking about because people who want to get into comedy, they need help. They need guidance. They want to figure out how to do it. And you're doing a comedy camp.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I knew the guy who does the rock and roll fantasy camp, and the guy's been doing it for years, and he gets all these great rock and roll legends to do it, and it's a big hit, and he's been doing it for, I don't know, 20 years, and at some point I said, why don't we do a comedy fantasy camp where we just get a bunch of comedians, guys like Jay Leno and other people you know, and writers and like producers, and we'll just do the exact same model, but we'll just do it for comedy.
Oh, that's great.
AJ's drooling right now. Yeah. AJ does stand-up.
Yes.
And, you know, he's got a real job, and he's got a life, so he's not out there every night doing open mics. And, you know, let's do a little peek inside of what this will be like. Can you work with AJ a little bit right now?
Talk slowly.
We're kind of working from novice and above. We're not taking the real greenhorns, you know.
Right. That would be me. I'm a greenhorn.
No, anybody's welcome. It's going to end up with a performance at the Hollywood Improv. But you don't have to be a stand-up. We're going to have a lot of successful people who run sitcoms and write for sitcoms and produce comedy. So even if you're just looking to break in, probably more practically into a writer's room, it'd be a good weekend for you.
Right.
You know what's neat about this is that with all the streaming shows now, there's just in YouTube and whatever, there's a need for writers.
Yes.
So it's not a bad time if you ever wanted to pursue your dream before you get too married and kids and house and stuff to go to one of these things and, you know, get a basic feel for how to do it.
I'll give you guys.
Yeah.
You can go to fantasycamp.com and you can get all the details there, register and all that. I think it's starts October 12th.
So let's just say stand up. Let's just say you're interested in stand up.
Yeah.
Where do you start? Do you try to categorize people like, okay, this guy's going to be the dirty joke guy. This guy's going to be this more Seinfeld kind of joke.
Try and find their niche.
Do you try to put them into categories or where do you start?
I think I would look at somebody's act and go, here's where I think your strengths are and here's what your insecurities are and here's what you need to focus more on. I mean, I think it becomes obvious after watching somebody do stand-up just for a couple of minutes where, you know, we've all seen the rookie stand-up where you went, there's some kernels of material there. There's some truth there. There's some interesting premises. They just need to kind of string it together or not bail on it or work on it a little harder. Just a little directional help.
So how do they do that? I mean, do you have anybody who goes to the camp does a performance for you, or do they submit a tape? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, Jay will give everyone a talk. We'll watch people perform. We'll evaluate, and then we'll, if you want to perform, we'll end up with a performance at the improv.
That's excellent.
So, there's no scenario where someone does something for you and you say, you know what? Here's your money back. This isn't for you.
A greenhorn.
No, it's a supportive environment.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I might say, and I've had it said to me. I had it said to me early in my career where somebody said, you're more of a writer than you are a performer.
Oh.
So maybe focus more on writing than performing, which made me feel great. But I remember, I might say to somebody, you have really good premises, but you're not a performer. Like, focus on getting into a writer's room.
I think great comedians make it look so easy to stand there and do comedy. And when you think about the premise, you know, the whole room is going to stop talking and listen to this one person.
Right.
Not only talk,
right,
but make them laugh. And then now you got waitresses and waiters and plates moving and dishes and your own mind and life going on.
A million distractions.
There's
more than ever now with the phones. Yeah.
When I see people like you, Adam, do it, I'm like, wow, this is really, it's really cool to watch.
Yeah.
Well, thanks. yeah. And depending on what kind of club you're playing at, you can hear them shaking martinis.
Yeah, some kind of bathroom.
You hear the sizzling fajita platter go by.
Right. Yeah. Careful, plate hot, plate hot.
Do you remember, I try not to ask people best and worst stuff, but do you remember, like, is there a gig that is really horrible that just pops into your mind when you think about bad gigs?
I had to do a gig in, Pennsylvania, some college. I mean, nobody there wanted to see me.
Right.
This is not that long. It's only like 8 or 10 years ago. And I was just doing it for the money. It was in Mansfield, Pennsylvania. And it was a bunch of 19-year-olds who had no interest in seeing, you know, old comedian Adam Carolla. And the guy who brought me up on stage, I said, just bring me up. Just go, hey, it's Adam Carolla, I don't know, from Loveline or The Man Show. Just bring me up.
Yeah.
He stood there and read a Wikipedia page of me that was 5 pages long. And all I did is I sat there and heard about everything that I'd done that used to be good. And then I walked out on stage. It was a blizzard. There was a cold pizza backstage. Like, I remember that being
Jesus.
My career.
Wow.
What do you tell, like, one of these people that are going to go to your camp, like, in that kind of a situation? How do you keep your mind right?
I think that's almost up to everybody. It's an individual thing. My feeling of performing is you're up there to perform. This isn't your time. It's their time. They bought the ticket. This isn't up for you to get into it with someone from the audience. This isn't for you to not be feeling it tonight. This isn't up to you to get up there and go, man, I'm so tired. I just got off the plane. You know, they bought the ticket. They're not, you know, you wouldn't get a massage and have the masseuse complain about what a long day they had.
Right, my hands hurt so bad. Yeah.
Yeah, that bitch in the other room's distracting me. Application of lotion. I mean, this is their time.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's the way I look at it. They came out, they work hard, this is their Saturday night. I may be going through a crap divorce, tired and jet lagged, but this is their time when I'm on stage.
Do you write your material, or do you just, like, memorize everything? Because some folks write the material, and some people, I'm just curious, like, what do you do?
Well, you write it first, and
I don't write it out. I just write the beats of the jokes that I want to do, the premises, basically,
okay.
And then just get up and do them.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. I forget, I find when I write something, it's the worst.
I'll see AJ go out and do 30 minutes, and I'm like, I have no idea how he remembers this whole, you know, do this joke, do that joke. And you guys are doing inventory.
There's a rhythm.
You're like,
yeah.
This is working, I'm going to add this. This
right.
isn't working, I'm going to move over here.
Right.
Yeah, I got to let you go. All right, so I'm getting a note here.
Oh.
Let Adam go. He's got to do another.
Okay. No!
Always great to have you.
Never!
On.
Thank
We're
you.
Linked up to all these things. It'll benefit podcasters, writers, comedians, whatever you want to do in entertainment. Where else can you get one-on-one time with all these greats?
Seriously.
Adam Carolla, thanks for coming on.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now, and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.